When the music fades, all is stripped away, and I simply come, longing just to bring something that's of worth, that will bless your heart.
Hi, this is Chaplains Timothy Burdick
and Stephanie Burdick,
and we'd like to welcome you to the Visions of Love podcast, reaching out to the spiritually and physically blind throughout the world.
Hi everyone, and welcome to our podcast. Today we present part one of our interview with Paul Barreca from Fellowship International Mission. And Paul has some inspiring stories for us about this wonderful ministry. We hope you will enjoy part one of this interview. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
It's all about you, Jesus. I'm sorry, Lord, for the thing I've made. When it's all about you, it's all about you. Thank you.
To contact us, all you need to do is go to mynvm.com.
NVM is an acronym for New Vision Ministries.
If you want to contact us, there's a contact form on the website. Or if you don't know Christ or need prayer, please call 507-369-6861. Thank you.
And now for part one of our interview with Paul Barreca.
Okay, hello everybody. It's my honor to present Paul Barreca from Fellowship International Mission. Paul, could you introduce yourself, please?
So good to be with you and your guests today. Yes, I am the Executive Director of Fellowship International Mission. That is a mission agency that started in 1950. Currently, we are serving 30 nations and have missionaries in 30 nations, all doing very different types of things. We focus on helping the missionary to fulfill the call that God has placed in their life, and so we have the wonderful privilege of working with many different people groups in many different functions, everything from Bible translation to education to church planting to medical ministries, refugee ministries, all kinds of different things. So if God's placed a burden in your heart to serve in missions, we'd certainly love to talk to you about that. That's what the Lord has called us to do, is support and serve those who are called.
Great. Well, how did FIM get founded?
Interesting story, and it kind of is part of what makes us unique as a mission agency. Most missionary agencies start when a group of people or a Christian goes someplace or learns about a people group or a country or a need in ministry that is not being met. And they gather other people around and they say, hey, we need to reach China, or we need to create a way for missionaries to get to the interior by airplane, or we need to reach this section of Africa or this people group. And they gather together other like-minded believers to accomplish this large goal. And out of that comes organizations like Wycliffe Bible Translators and Missionary Aviation Fellowship and Africa Inland Mission, right? FIM is different. FIM started in 1950 when two female students at Moody Bible Institute felt God's call to reach people in Morocco, particularly children. Well, it was 1950. The war had just been over. And they applied to all of the mission agencies that they could think of, and everyone turned them down. They said, well, you're single, and you're women, and Morocco's Muslim, and it's dangerous, and you can't go. Well, they went anyway. They bought a ticket, they got on a ship, sailed to Morocco, they got there and realized that indeed God had called them. And so Mary Mellinger and Irene Wenholtz wrote back to their pastors, two different churches, and said, hey, God's called us, we need to stay, but we need your help to, you know, meet this need and to take care of our financial problems and needs. And the two pastors got together and formed an agency called the Sahara Gospel Fellowship. And that eventually became what is known today as Fellowship International Mission. So when we talk about starting with the call of the missionary rather than the call or the burden of the mission agency, that's really going all the way back to our founding with Mary and Irene back in 1950.
So what are some other differences between calling and recruiting?
Wow, so we call recruiting mobilizing. We are seeking to mobilize the Church of Jesus Christ.
That's a better word.
Mobilizing believers, just as an army would mobilize, you know, a force. So we're mobilizing believers to go out and do this task. Recruiting is kind of has, I mean, you know, some certainly an okay term to use, but recruiting is about a job. Mobilizing, mobilizing is about a task and a calling from the Lord, and that's what we do. So we go on to, you know, Christian campuses, Liberty University and Moody Bible Institute and all the hosts of Christian universities, Lancaster Bible College, et cetera, go to these schools and set up a table. Sometimes they have a missions conference, and we'll be at that missions conference with 10 or 20 or 30 other missionary agencies. And we're just talking to young people that feel God's call to be a missionary. And what's really cool about it is that we get to show that young person, sometimes it's not even a young person, sometimes it's a midlife or even a retired person, we get to show them that it seems very daunting, and indeed serving as a missionary is a great call with many challenges, but with the help of your church and the specialized services of an organization like FIM, we can meet those challenges. And we let them know, you know, well, they say, well, how am I going to learn a language? And how am I going to raise all this money? And how am I going to, you know, get in this country? And what if it's dangerous? And, well, we've been doing this for, you know, 70, almost 75 years now. And we've got a lot of experience. We've got a lot of insight. And we help walk and really disciple that young man or woman or young couple or family through the process of what it is to serve the Lord in a foreign culture. And so we provide training and resources and support. And then when they get to the field, missionary care and all the host of things that that we do as a mission agency.
Now, one thing I was wondering to kind of hitchhike on that, when you're talking about God's calling and mobilizing people, when people really felt called rather than just being emotionally recruited or something, would they have a longer duration in the field?
Yes, they do. And in fact, we see, we have missionaries that are serving into their 80s and 90s. We don't have a mandatory retirement age because, I don't know, but I don't remember reading that anywhere in the Bible, that thou shalt retire at 65.
I'm glad to have a kindred spirit.
Yeah. So as long as that missionary is still serving full time. Now, what we do is, you know, in the U.S., when you hit 65 or 68 or whatever age you're going to take Social Security, obviously you're getting some, you know, some retirement benefits from the government. We're very upfront about that with donors. We insert that as income into that missionary's budget. So when someone starts collecting Social Security, their need for funds decreases, for support funds, it decreases by the amount that they're getting from the U.S. government. So, you know, we recognize that, but we don't tell missionaries, hey, you're 65 or 68 and you're collecting Social Security, so you pack it up and ministry's over. Not at all. God.
Yeah, I don't read that either. Do you have both short-term and long-term missionaries?
Yeah, so we consider missionaries from the financial aspect of what it is to serve them. We put them in three distinctions. One is short term, and that's anywhere from 2 weeks to up to a few months. And on a short term mission, you raise support from your friends and your church for your ministry expenses, but you don't get any kind of salary because it's usually a high school or college kid going out for the summer, and you know, sometimes older folks too. That's short term. Something we call midterm, M-I-D, midterm, and sometimes we refer to it as an internship. And that's anywhere from maybe 6 months up to 2 years. And that kind of ministry is really for the purpose of discovering, is God calling me to this place, to this country, to this people group? And on that kind of ministry, we do everything we do for the full-time missionary. We set up a budget. They receive salary for their personal living and, you know, travel and insurance and all of those kinds of things. And then, of course, full-time or career mission. So we have short-term, mid-term, and career. Most agencies will have two or all three of those categories.
So people don't raise their own support?
Yes. Then once they're accepted, they raise their support, and that support is sent directly to FIM. Or to, you know, it's very much the same for Crew or Send International or ABWE or Samaritan's Purse. Your money is sent to the organization, and that organization then pays the missionary as an employee of the organization. Yeah, it's kind of a very unique thing in the nonprofit world. But yeah, so the missionaries raise support. We help them to do that, but we don't do it for them.
Okay. How do you help that process along?
Yeah, through training. We have a training period of a week where new missionaries, new career missionaries will come, and we talk to them about raising support. Raising support is really just about sharing your vision. What has God called you to do? And when you share that with God's people, they respond because, you know, you might be talking to your friends or church. Well, they'd love to go, but God hasn't called them. But they do have some money, and they can pray for you. And so by doing that, they get to share in your ministry. And so we encourage our missionaries, we train our missionaries how to share that vision, talk about the people that you're going to be serving, talk about the need that's there, and talk about your strategy for ministry. And then God's people, as they learn about that, they just get excited and they want to. Normally, they don't even have to ask them, hey, will you support me? If you've got a compelling vision and you share that with God's people always respond very, very generously.
Now, I was wondering to take a little bit of a turn here. Do you have any missions to people with special needs?
We have missionaries to the deaf. The largest unreached people group in the world are the deaf.
Really?
Wow. Yes, we consider them as a people group because think about it, they all speak the same language. They might live in various different countries, but there's, of course, different kinds of sign language, but they all communicate through signing, and so that is a people group. And you think about it, it's a very unreached people group. So, yes, we do have ministry to some underserved people groups, such as ministry to the deaf. Not so much with other disadvantages, other medical or mental academic disadvantages, but definitely to the deaf.
Wow, okay, that's great. Well, can you tell us some stories about how God is working in film, maybe some of your favorite stories?
Well, one of them is my first trip to India just a few months ago. We have two Indian pastors that serve with FIM. They're not U.S. citizens. They're citizens of India, but they're called as pastors. They have some friends in the U.S., and so they came to FIM and said, hey, can you help us manage the support that we're getting from the U.S.? And one of them is in Western India. I went to visit him, and he had told us when he signed on and going through the application process that it was his vision to plant 6,000 churches in India. And I read that and I thought, come on, that you meant 600, right? No, 6,000. And I just kind of thought, well, that's really noble, it's nice, it's bold, but you know, it's kind of unrealistic. Well, I got to India and I met with 30 leaders of the church planting ministry that he has. So they came and they sat all day and they listened to my teaching. I taught for 12 hours. No one fell asleep. They wanted more, and I was exhausted. I couldn't do any more. These are village individuals. Most of them don't have any formal education. Most of them can read, but that's about it. But each of these guys will go back to their village, and they were going to share these lessons with 5, 6, 7 other pastors. I'm going back to the same place in October, and this time my missionary said, these guys loved it so much, they want you to come back. They will have 300 pastors.
Wow.
The word is spreading in India, particularly among the Dalit people. That's the kind of the outcast. One cool story about that is that he had some friends in the U.S. and they raised money for him to buy some property. And because he's of the Dalit class, no one would sell him property. There's a lot of bigotry and racism, not about the color of your skin, but the class that you come from, you know. Supposedly that was done away with in India. Well, it's still there. But finally, he went to this one village, and he did an evangelistic outreach, and, you know, we found out that there's Christians in this village, but they have no church, they have no pastor. And there's other villages, they said, hey, there's other villages right nearby. The villages tend to be in little clusters of, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 villages. And there's other villages nearby, they don't have any church or pastor. And our missionary asked if they had any property, and they said, yes, come, we'll show you a piece of property. So they agreed they would sell him this property if he would build a church. And so he bought the property, and the first thing he did was he put a well, a 400, very, very deep well, because water is very, very hard to come by. And the underclass, the Dalit people, the underserved, the outcasts, the city only gives them, they turn on the water for a few hours once a week.
Wow.
Because they're not the right class of people. So it's a very, very hard life. He dug a well. There was no water. The 400 feet, that's all the money he had. He went down 400 feet. The water didn't produce well. And I said, what did you do? He said, well, me and my family, we fasted and prayed. And then the next day we came back and there was water.
Wow.
And God provided the water. And he went to the village leaders and he said, here is water. Here's the pump. Go ahead and connect. And he's providing this village of about 50 families with the first fresh water they've ever had, other than trucks coming or, you know, rain collection or those kinds of things. The first clean, fresh water. And this village, many Christians, but Hindus and Muslims also. And now they all want to come to church. They all want to study. He's doing Bible studies with them. And you think about all of the cool things you can say about the living water, right? Where Jesus declared in John 10, I am the living water, and what that means. And so he's able to do that. And just an outstanding ministry, one of many, but that one in India comes to mind. So I'd ask your listeners to pray for the next upcoming trip to India in October, going back to teach those 300 pastors in the area is called Gujarat. That's where we'll be going. All about
you. That concludes part one of this interview. We hope that you're enjoying it. And please stay tuned for part two of this interview in 2 weeks. Thank you. Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. God bless.
Thank you, and God bless you.